Hello, I'm Lynn Ahmoudou. Welcome to Health Chat. As schools reopen worldwide for in-person learning, UNICEF and the World Health Organization have called for all school staff to be included in nationwide vaccination plans for COVID-19. And children 12 years and older who suffer from underlying health conditions to be immunized due to rising cases of the Delta variant. After months of schools closing, some countries in sub-Saharan Africa have fully or partially reopened face-to-face lessons. In Somalia, the government has reopened schools despite a new wave of coronavirus infections. As Mohamed Sheikh Noor reports from Mogadishu, there are concerns about whether measures to prevent the virus from spreading in classrooms and beyond will be sufficient.
Early morning in a Mogadishu school, and students arrive to prepare for today's activities. None of the students are wearing masks, even though the country is experiencing a new wave of COVID-19 infections. Khadija Adam is the principal responsible for the day-to-day running of the institution. She has a daunting task ahead, trying to keep her students safe.
We keep reminding our students about good sanitation. The students understand that they must wash hands. We lobbied the Ministry of Education and they have supported us with hand-washing facilities. We normally instill in students that it is compulsory to sanitize their hands and wear masks, as this will enable schools to remain open.
In Somalia, uptake for COVID-19 vaccines remains low. The most vulnerable are the elderly, and there is fear school reopening might increase infections among the students who will ultimately expose their families.
I am really worried about the coronavirus as it has returned and reached its peak. I'm concerned about the health of my family since school has reopened, and I might get infected in school and take the virus back to my family.
The prolonged closure of schools due to the pandemic had a negative impact on the lives of young Somalis. There was a significant increase in school dropouts, and this disrupted the social and economic well-being of families.
The long lockdown negatively impacted education. Some girls disappointed with education got married and started families. Boys who dropped out became either touts on passenger vehicles or migrated to other places. The length of the lockdown really affected education.
One of the principal side effects of the coronavirus on education is that even the few students who showed resilience to continuing with education performed poorly during exams. Performance was below average, unlike any other time in the past. The quality of education went down, and some schools had to close down.
When it announced the reopening of schools, Somalia's Ministry of Education promised preventive measures were in place to ensure learning returns to normal. Students are required to wear face masks and maintain social distancing, among other measures. However, not all of these preventive measures are being followed, as seen in the Mogadishu school. Mohamed Sheikh Noor for VOA News, Mogadishu, Somalia.
Dr. Meron Hepar is an internal medicine specialist in Baltimore, Maryland, near Washington, D.C. He spoke to VOA about safety measures for children and teachers in the classroom during COVID-19. Take a listen.
A lot of children who have not had access to any kind of schooling have fallen behind, you know, a year or more. We know that many kids are now at risk for having nutritional deficiencies because they don't have access to foods that schools used to provide. A lot of kids are also at risk for of violence and exploitation. Currently, only the Pfizer vaccine is approved to be given to children 12 and higher in places like Africa, just because of shortages in vaccine. The WHO currently recommends that children who are 12 and higher get the Pfizer vaccine if they are at high risk of getting the COVID-19 infection. So these are children who may have underlying conditions. We also know that there are specific complications that children who've had COVID-19 can experience. In addition, you know, children, even if they have mild illness, can spread the disease to other people who may be more vulnerable for having severe illness. I think it's really critical that the schools and governments and local health authorities take, into account a lot of the public health measures that are in line with the guidelines from the WHO to protect children from getting sick and spreading the virus. So there are many things that we can do. I think for one, it's really important for local agencies to, have ways when possible of appropriately diagnosing, identifying people who are ill. I think it's really important that public health authorities know the community transmission rate to try to make decisions as to whether it's safe to have our children and teachers back in the schools in the first place. In places where there's no running water or soap, I think it's important that we try to provide to the extent possible hand sanitizers, disinfecting high-touch areas like doorknobs and desks. Ventilation is very helpful in trying to prevent the transmission of COVID-19, making sure that, students are standing 1 meter apart from one another, so the desks need to be 1 meter apart. We need to make sure that we are screening for children who may be sick. And as always, communicating with the families, the parents, and the communities about what's going on.
That was internal medicine specialist Dr. Meron Hipa speaking to VOA. Now, a growing number of countries are mandating COVID-19 vaccinations and imposing vaccine passports to show proof of immunization against the disease. Medical observers say preventing infection through the vaccine may help end the coronavirus pandemic, but the move is drawing strong criticism. Take a listen.
To mandate or not to mandate? That is the question that is fueling worldwide debate over the COVID-19 vaccine. Many experts say vaccination is one of the most effective ways to lower the spread of the virus. However, vaccinations are meeting some opposition and hesitancy. As health officials aim to have more people get the shot, countries are imposing various measures to increase vaccination rates. In South Africa, President Cyril Ramaphosa on Sunday announced plans to introduce COVID-19 vaccine passports. Africa's worst virus-hit country by the coronavirus is also struggling with widespread skepticism of the jab.
Government has secured sufficient vaccines to vaccinate the entire adult population, and the supply of vaccines is no longer a constraint. We will also be providing further information on an approach for vaccine passports, which can be used as evidence of vaccination for various purposes and events, so that as people go around, they are able to demonstrate that, yes, they've been vaccinated through cell phone or other form of demonstration.
Vaccine passports are a digital or paper documents that show that a person has been vaccinated against COVID-19. They are being required in some countries to enter some venues, such as nightclubs or restaurants, or for travel. The COVID vaccine passport is not without controversy and has led to protests. The British government has just abandoned plans to introduce COVID passports in England.
At the moment, I mean, both Sajid Javid, the health secretary, and Nadeem Zahawi, the vaccines minister, they're both right. What we want to do is avoid vaccine passports if we possibly can. And that's what that's the course we're on. But I think you've got to be prudent, and you've got to keep things in reserve in case things change. Obviously, that's right.
A growing number of countries are introducing mandatory COVID-19 vaccination for certain groups. This includes health workers in many countries, federal employees and contractors in the United States, nursing home staff and caregivers in Greece, and firefighters in France beginning on September 15th. In the Gambia, authorities began imposing vaccinations in mid-August on tourism workers. Zimbabwe is warning that civil servants refusing the vaccination should resign. Large businesses like Disney and Goldman Sachs have made COVID vaccinations mandatory for their employees. The World Health Organization reports that at least 4.5 million people have died from COVID-19, but more than 200 million have recovered from the virus. Lenore Moudou, VOA News, Washington.
As South Africa prepares for a fourth wave of COVID-19, there are growing calls for the government to make vaccinations mandatory, but the calls are opposed by a loud anti-vaxxer lobby group. These are people who, for a variety of reasons, don't believe in immunizing people during one of the deadliest pandemics in history. Darren Taylor reports.
The South African Committee of Health Sciences Deans is on a long list of organizations that want citizens to, in effect, be forced to take the jab. Chairman Professor Tian de Jager says there's enough scientific evidence to prove the vaccines are safe and effective. He says the state should start with mandatory vaccinations in any and all healthcare facilities.
It is critical to get students, doctors, any staff working in a health setting vaccinated to make sure that we're not putting the patients at risk or anybody in any environment.
Calls such as the Jager's come on the back of research by one of South Africa's biggest public hospitals, Groote Schuur in Cape Town. Operations Chief for the Health Department, Dr. Sadiq Karim, says the study concentrated on patients admitted with serious COVID-19.
On the day that they did the survey, of the 156 people admitted to Groote Schuur Hospital with COVID, in fact, they found that 153 people were unvaccinated. Of those who were admitted into the intensive care, of the 66, they found that all of them were in fact unvaccinated. Of the 32 people on ventilators, all of them were again unvaccinated. So I think it sends a really important, really powerful message.
But the anti-vaxxers have dismissed this study as lies and continue to encourage people not to take vaccines. Their reasons for doing so include that COVID-19 is a hoax designed to enrich pharmaceutical companies and that vaccines make people infertile. The anti-vaxxer movement is particularly strong in the Western Cape province, where Karim's based.
I mean, as medical practitioners, we are obviously equally frustrated in the province that people just don't listen to the science of it, that they believe all kinds of conspiracy theories, and a lot of that misinformation can be combated, and that's why the colleagues from Groote Schuur Hospital, in fact, put out that graphic that so visibly displays to people and proves to people what the benefits of vaccination are.
De Jager says those refusing to be immunized have no excuse for their stance because it's not based on scientific evidence and is extremely selfish.
We need to do the responsible thing. If you're not vaccinated and you go to the doctors, obviously you're at higher risk and the chances are much bigger to expose everybody within that practice. And it is basically a measurement to protect other patients as well as the doctor and the healthcare workers working in that facility.
But Karim says the anti-vaxxers won't listen to doctors like him and De Jager because they consider them to be part of the so-called conspiracy. So his department is trying to overcome vaccine hesitancy in other ways.
Whether they be community leaders or whether they be religious leaders, we've been using trusted voices to try and get the scientific message across to people, because it's quite clear that as medical practitioners, we are not having the impact that we would have desired and wanted to have.
The government says at this stage it won't force anyone to take the jab, and it remains the right of every citizen to choose whether to be vaccinated. For VOA News, I'm Darren Taylor in Johannesburg.
You are listening to Health Chat on Voice of America. It is time for a short break. Don't go away. We'll be right back.
This is a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
Hello, I'm VOA Health Correspondent Lenore Moudou. The World Health Organization and U.S. Centers for Disease Control say coughing and sneezing can spread COVID-19. Physical distancing, staying at least 1 meter away from people outside your family, can protect everyone. For more information, check with reliable sources such as the WHO and Africa CDC. And remember to listen to VOA for the latest on COVID-19.
That was a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
Welcome back to Health Chat. With new COVID-19 cases gradually decreasing in Zimbabwe and the economy and schools reopening, the government is further easing lockdown restrictions. Reporter Kudzai Zvinavashe has more details.
President Emmerson Mnangagwa announced the revised measures on state television yesterday.
Fellow Zimbabweans, the last 2 weeks have seen our nation record a further marked reduction in new COVID-19 cases. I'm therefore introducing a relaxation of the current level 4 lockdown to level 2 lockdown.
That includes easing the curfew from 10 p.m. to 5:30 a.m., allowing intercity travel, public gatherings of up to 100 people, and low-risk sports, and expanding opening hours for businesses, restaurants, and bars within hotels and lodges and liquor sales. Munyara Dzidodo is an analyst. He tells VOA the new measures will be widely welcome in the arts sector.
I think it's good that events can now happen with 100 people and that intercity travel can happen. I think a lot of artists will welcome that and will hope that more easing will happen in the next 2 weeks so that the artists in Zimbabwe can have a chance to actually make money. They've been under lockdown for nearly a year now and haven't had income from their craft coming through. So this will go a long way in maybe easing their burden.
Harare resident Diana Chipere explains how the new measures will ease the burden on her daily routine.
It's a very good move. It makes a lot of sense because before we were finishing work at 3 o'clock and the stores were closing at the same time. So you don't really have time to go to the store and do the things that you need to do. And I think that even like exacerbates numbers because now everybody's rushing to the store at the same time before it closes.
While the revisions have been widely welcomed, some think they could have been introduced earlier. The public is also being told to continue masking up, sanitizing, and social distancing to avoid another spike of coronavirus cases and a likely return of tighter measures. For VOA, this is Kudzai Zvinavashe from Harare.
Malawi health authorities fear vaccine hesitancy could see another 160,000 doses of COVID-19 jabs go unused before they expire at the end of this month. To increase uptake, authorities have introduced a mobile clinic to bring the vaccine closer to people. Lamek Masina reports from Blantyre.
Intro. Malawi health authorities fear vaccine hesitancy could lead to tens of thousands of COVID-19 jabs expiring early next month. With just 2% of Malawi's population vaccinated, authorities hope to increase uptake by deploying mobile vaccination clinics to bring the vaccine closer to people. Lamek Masina reports from Blantyre. Text. Malawi has so far received just over 1.2 million doses of the Johnson & Johnson and AstraZeneca vaccines under the COVAX facility. But vaccine hesitancy in Malawi is widespread just because of misperceptions of the jab's efficacy and safety. Dr. Gift Kawalazira, who heads the Health and Social Services at the Blantyre Health Office, says there is another reason for the low vaccination rate.
So we have noticed that with the coming in of summer, the number of cases have drastically reduced, and also the number of people coming for vaccinations have reduced from having over 2,000 people per day to having just about 400 people per day now.
Dr. Kawalazira said deploying mobile vaccination centers will help increase vaccine uptake, noting that when the initiative was launched Saturday, over 600 people were vaccinated and six companies booked the mobile clinic to come and vaccinate their workers. He predicts the initiative will help Malawi meet its vaccination target by 60% by 2022 and allay fears that more vaccines will expire.
Johnson & Johnson is actually expiring after December. But AstraZeneca have got two different batches. One of it is starting next month, and the other one is going up until December.
In May, Malawi incinerated about 20,000 AstraZeneca doses that had expired after many people refused the jab due to concerns about its safety and efficacy. Malawi Health Ministry statistics show that currently only about 700,000 people have had one jab, while about 400,000 are fully vaccinated, representing 2.1% of the 18 million population. Simeon Piri got his jab Wednesday at a mobile COVID-19 vaccination clinic at Limbe Market in Blanta. He told VOA that this has helped me a lot because it has provided me easy access to the vaccine instead of walking a long distance. I came here to Limbe to do some errands, but I also have found an opportunity to get vaccinated. To increase uptake in rural areas, the government is currently working with traditional leaders to mobilize and tell their communities about the need to be vaccinated when the mobile clinics visit their villages. Lamek Masina for VOA News, Blanta, Malawi.
The WHO says genomic sequencing capability is being improved in Africa to better detect, monitor, and respond to COVID-19 mutations. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva.
Several variants of the coronavirus are circulating in African countries. The Delta variant is by far the most contagious and virulent. The variants have sparked flare-ups of this deadly disease. However, the Delta variant is most responsible for prolonging Africa's third pandemic wave. The World Health Organization says Africa's COVID-19 third wave is now tapering off after a two-month surge, with the number of new cases decreasing by 23% last week. The World Health Organization says the caseload remains extremely high, though, with more than 165,000 new weekly cases reported. WHO Regional Director for Africa, Machidiso Moeti, says the WHO is supporting countries in scaling up pathogen surveillance through genome sequencing. She says together with the South African National Bioinformatics Institute, the WHO is launching a new regional center of excellence for genomic surveillance in Cape Town.
Knowing which variants are circulating and where is critical for informing effective response operations. The continent lags far behind the rest of the world when it comes to sequencing, accounting for only 1% of over 3 million COVID-19 sequences conducted worldwide. So this groundbreaking initiative aims to initially support 14 Southern African countries to scale up their genomic sequencing by 15-fold each month.
Moeti says analysis will shed light on the pathways COVID-19 is using to spread into communities. On the vaccine front, she notes Africa still lags far behind the world's richer nations in inoculating its inhabitants.
In the past week, the COVAX facility has delivered over 5 million doses to African countries. I was saddened to read that three times as many doses have been thrown away in the United States alone, 15 million doses since March 2021. This is enough vaccines to cover everyone over 18 years in Liberia, Mauritania, and the Gambia, for example.
Moeti says high-income countries have not kept their pledges to share 1 billion doses globally. So far, she says only 120 million doses have been released. She notes only 3% of the continent's 1.2 billion people are fully vaccinated. She says Africa has passed the sad milestone of 200,000 lives lost to the coronavirus, lives that could have been saved had they received a dose of the vaccine. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
We turn now to cholera. Nigerian health officials say nearly 1,800 people have died from the disease this year, with cases found in more than 20 states around the country. To combat the bacterial disease that is spread by dirty water, Nigeria's Federal Ministry of Environment is urging proper hygiene and organizing mass cleanups in affected areas. Timothy Obiezu reports from the capital, Abuja.
At New Kuchigoro Camp for Internally Displaced People in Abuja,
Camp officials say at least 40 cases of cholera have been recorded there since a recent surge began in July. Most of the patients were first treated in the camp by Adamu Selikaya, a self-educated pharmacist who usually refers severe cases to hospitals. But officials say at least 10 people have died so far, including Estefanos Beatrice's 7-year-old son, who died early August, despite receiving overnight first aid treatment for diarrhea at Selikaya's dispensary. Beatrice says the death of his son devastated him. Beatrice said his son had received 7 infusions that night and got better. At home the next morning, the boy was okay, but about 11 a.m. the severe diarrhea came back and the boy died soon after. Diarrhea is a common symptom of cholera, a bacterial disease that causes dehydration. It is often severe in children. The Nigerian Center for Disease Control, NCDC, says the country's death toll from cholera this year stands at about 1,800. At last count, there were about 48,000 cases spread across 24 of Nigeria's 36 states. NCDC says children between 5 and 14 years old were mostly affected. Michael Ogbonna, a health planning research and statistics officer at the Ministry of Health, says the government is taking action to reduce the spread and treat infected people.
We have cholera control systems programs that are already on ground, matching efforts against the spread of cholera. I want to assure you that actions are going on through some of the quarters and branches of the ministry where these programs are being anchored.
The programs include sensitization on proper hygiene and cleanup exercises, especially in affected areas, to halt the outbreak and stop the disease's spread. Camp officials in New Kuchigoro have been encouraging the same at the camp, but Selikaya says good hygiene is not easy to achieve with closely built shelters and inadequate water supply.
We lack so many basic amenities like toilet facility, health facilities, with other social amenities, because we don't have even potable water. These are the kind of things that is contributing cholera outbreak.
Cholera is easily transmitted by eating or drinking contaminated food or water. Floods caused by the rainy season contribute to the spread. The rains will go away soon, but victims say unless congested camps like this are expanded, the cholera threat will always be there. Timothy Obiezu for VOA News, Abuja, Nigeria.
That's all for this edition of Health Chat. For the latest news and coverage on the coronavirus, visit voanews.com. Check us out at facebook.com/voahealthchat. Thank you all for joining us, and special thanks to all our affiliate stations throughout Africa for carrying Health Chat. I'm your host, Lenore Mudo, in Washington, with producer Dan Brown. Until next time, take care, stay safe, and wash your hands more frequently, and strive to make every day a healthy day.
Stay informed and up to date Monday through Friday at 3:30 and 17:05 UTC with VOA's International Edition. Our correspondents bring you the news from around the globe, plus we delve into the context of the day's biggest stories with interviews with experts that place the story into context to understand why it matters. VOA's International Edition, your best source for news and information.
Sporty greetings to all our Voice of America listeners. This is VOA's Sonny Young, host of The Sunny Side of Sports. Tune in right here, Mondays through Fridays, at 16:30 and 18:30 UTC for an action-packed 30-minute program of African, American, and international sports highlights.
On the next Straight Talk Africa, we'll take a look at terrorism hotspots on the continent and discuss what's at stake. We'll look at how young people are being recruited by terrorist organizations and what governments can do to stop it. Join me, Heidi Adams, on the next Straight Talk Africa. This Wednesday at 18:30 UTC.
This is VOA News.